I've been working as a human rights defender in the LGBTIQ space for many, many, many years. And I decided sometimes you see an opportunity to create a space that may not exist. And I saw an opportunity to explore the concept of allyship from within our movement. I am a gay woman, but I'm not a transgender or an intersex person, and so my allyship needs to be directed to them. And sometimes you hear the word ally as someone who is a heterosexual ally or considered a straight ally, but I think there's a lot of work that our own movement can do with each other, and then going out to those that are not involved in those spaces and making it easier conversations to have. So we're a little small potato, as we'd say in Hong Kong, international NGO focused on advocacy and allyship within the movement, creating movements within our movement. And travel is one of the key areas that we're really, really focused on.
So that brings us to Miles of Love, which is part of the Feast Festival. And the moment I saw that program, I mean, it was talking about trans in Dubai, gay in Brunei, whiteness and travel privilege, some really interesting questions, which is why I registered so quickly
Oh, we
to
were
go to that
so
workshop.
happy to have you.
Tell us more about Miles of Love, where it started. Was Adelaide the first one on the list, or is this a series?
So the story of me being in Hong Kong is because I met a girl, which some people may identify with, the guilty of stories starting that way. So 16 years ago, I met a girl who was training to be a pilot, and Cathay Pacific train pilots down in Parafield of all places. But when
I do know that.
a little bit of a cliche story, but we met on a football field. I was very, very involved in football when I was here. That was my former life. And so basically the catalyst to all of this was looking at life as an expatriate in Hong Kong for all these years and as a gay woman, seeing some of my fellow community members traveling in the region, and particularly Middle East and parts of Asia, and taking risks that they may not be aware of. And I kind of cottoned on to this idea that just because you may be gay doesn't mean you know your rights. So that was initially what it was. And then from the perspective of a pilot's wife, and looking at the issues that pilots who are gay face. I mean, pilots travel into regions that are regressive and have laws that can get, you know, very, very hairy, and the protections that don't exist. The more I got involved, the more I saw an opportunity for grassroots movement work and how we can support people that are traveling that are vulnerable. I'm not transgender, I'm not gender diverse, I'm not intersex, but there are deeply traumatic issues when you explore travel from the perspective of someone who already at the moment they have to open their passport, that's going to be an issue because their gender marker doesn't match who they are, and all of the issues that come with body screening and body scans. And so we're trying to hold space for a lot of big conversations. And you mentioned about privilege. Me as a privileged white person, it's delving into that allyship and my privilege and how I leverage networks and influence and privilege to create spaces that we can then open up that for other members of our community.
And you seem to be working well in that space, because I think on the way here to Adelaide, you had a very significant meeting, I think, with DFAT. Is
We
that right?
did. No, I think it's really so there's a lot of issues that we face within this space, but equally, when you look at some issues that came out this year, for instance, in Brunei, that's been boiling for more
Now,
than,
Bruno, not everyone might, so
no,
perhaps just a.
for more than 10 years, I think the Sultan of Brunei and the statute that's been impending is that, and in the last particularly 5 years, is that the death penalty was going to come out. And
Come out for.
for, well, not. To be honest, not just for the gay community, but there were issues around renouncing a religion, there were issues for minority groups. And to be honest, this is a huge issue, and we touched on this at Miles of Love, of looking at how hate is, you know, power are leveraged to scapegoat minorities. And this is a big issue. So with Brunei, that became a soft diplomacy conversation for the Australian government, and then looking at, you know, the Brunei Air is actually owned by Lufthansa, and you start to delve into this becomes a matter of the state, and conversations in the diplomatic spaces are really important in travel and how they can better support the immigration process. And so we had some really encouraging meetings. We've brought community members from all around the world in different intersections. So we had an Iranian refugee, we had an intersex person from India, we have had an Englishman who is on the British advisory on asylum and refugee issues for the council, for the British government. So lots of different people that were able to share. We had a Singaporean Paralympic athlete being able to talk about disability. And so all of these intersectional issues. So it was bringing that to the table and then saying, well, what can we do as human rights defenders? But you need to understand the process and the constraints that the government are in before we can just get angry and be activist-y. It's how can we navigate that quiet behind closed doors. So while we did a big public thing in Adelaide, which was phenomenal, it's really important that we're building what we call a global task force, the Miles of Love Global Task Force, to navigate all of these different intersections. And that really relies on raising visibility for issues around equality and protection and dignity. And it does, dignity is a huge one. Protection is obviously the absolute key.
And it's not always the big issues, is it?
No, I mean, I'm trying to hold space as someone that considers themselves privileged within our LGBTIQ plus community. But I have my own first world gay problems. And being that I travel a lot, we have two sons, my wife and I, and our youngest son is deafblind and nonverbal. And we need to come back to Australia as a non-Chinese family for medical reasons, for training and how to navigate all of that. Now, I gave birth to our eldest son, Flinny, who's 7, and Jude, who's 5, is the one who's my non-biological child. When I have to navigate the immigration space, my wife has had to actually produce a document that gives me permission to travel with him. Now, I cut the umbilical cord when he was born. I was there when he was when insemination was happening. So that's an issue of dignity and equality, but also, it's a bigger picture issue. That actually stems from a human trafficking space. But because these laws are not equal, we suffer the consequences of, you know, the repercussions. If we had that equality in the eyes of the law, that wouldn't be an issue. Human trafficking protection is vital, but it ends up becoming the marginalised vulnerable groups become a product of those gaps. Yeah, I think it actually just comes from the government themselves, and when marriage equality is, you know, we're far away from marriage equality in Hong Kong, but it's our marriage is not recognised, and then it becomes a birth certificate issue. So when I gave birth to Flinny, he was known as a bastard child, and my wife's not on the birth certificate. You know, she was there when he was born, and she was there when that was insemination happened. It was the flip of that. So It just right from the get-go, it's institutionalized discrimination at the heart of it that again vulnerable population groups suffer. So I guess I've called this a love letter to the problems that I see, and then I've gathered a badass group of global activists to really break all of these issues down. And what we see is it's just dialogue. There's a really massive emerging gay predominantly travel industry that garners billions of dollars, which is really important, but there's a disconnect between that travel that's happening and supporting human rights defenders who need to travel in regressive spaces or across regressive spaces, and there's a gap between supporting those on the ground that don't benefit from what is called the pink dollar. You know, so there's big issues there. But for us, it's conversations in dialogue with the airline industry themselves. So I won't name any of the airline industries, but we're in dialogue with them behind the scenes and trying to bring attention to some of these issues. And some of these airlines are out and proud at Pride events and yet are deporting asylum seekers. And some of these airlines are out and proud at events and yet may not appreciate the opportunity to have these close conversations about how to improve the lives of trans, gender diverse, intersex people when they're navigating the immigration system or even on the airline themselves, and how to make that more accessible, more diverse. But the interesting thing is when you are flying in the air, the toilet you use is technically a gender neutral space, isn't it? And yet on the ground, this becomes such a mighty, huge issue in terms of that being an issue for transgender, diverse, intersex people. There's huge trauma around bathrooms. There's entire legislation that is trying to discriminate against population groups on that issue alone, and scaremonger, and it's very traumatic and very damaging.
At the workshop, you were talking about gender markers in passports. Mm.
Some people don't even get on an aeroplane. Some people don't travel. Like, if you actually look and talk to people about the travel anxiety and the trauma, it is so much so that people will not even dare to travel. And if they do, it is fraught with, you know, I was talking to an intersex friend of mine who was sharing that for 20 hours in the air, when they travel from New Zealand to perhaps Geneva or further afield for their human rights work, they are terrified to know what's going to happen. Is this plane going to divert to a country like perhaps Saudi Arabia and Riyadh? And all of these issues are real concerns and trauma that are really underrated. So this idea of travel and bridging the gap, which is what Miles of Love is trying to do between human rights and travel, I think is really, really underrated, because it depends on the state, you know, on the country that you're landing or that you're passing through.
Passing transit.
Absolutely. And there's been known cases of this being an issue. And if you fall ill, you know, one of our human rights defenders fell ill recently and ended up in a country, in a hospital, where they were not protected. And they were very concerned that if they did find out that they were gay, that there could be a prosecution issue. So these are huge issues that we can talk to our government about to try to navigate on a whole range of ways to provide more protection, but also the dignity conversation and the triggering. One of the airlines, actually, Air Canada, just last fortnight released the fact that they are now longer not going to do the good evening, ladies and gentlemen, welcome on board. They're going to make that a not agendered conversation, because that's triggering and not everybody identifies. And the more and more youth are emerging and feeling comfortable exploring their identities and expressions, you'll hear this, that it's not just the binary identities. So that's a huge thing. And actually American Airlines, I believe it might have been United, one of the American Airlines has created non-binary travel policies. So this is something that the airlines are aware of. They're doing really positive work in affirming different identities that fall within the spectrum,